Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and we are back with another hypothetically speaking podcast preview of two people who may be in the Big Brother All-Stars house. Of course, we won't know for sure until Wednesday night when we watch the premiere of Big Brother 22, Big Brother All-Stars, when we finally get to see who the people are. But based on rumor, innuendo, and massive speculation in the Big Brother community, we have narrowed it down to a group of people that we think may be in this Big Brother game, and we are hypothetically speaking about their chances. And today we have two more good ones for you today. Very excited to talk about the return, hypothetically, of Tyler Crispin, the runner-up from Big Brother 20. We got a great panel to talk about what's going on with Tyler. Of course, Taryn will be with us the whole way through. Once again, we'll be talking with Taryn, talking with Aman Adwin, and also with one of our newcomers, Chris Alba, is going to be joining us for a very fun conversation talking about all things Tyler Crispin. And then I am going to be recording this actually after the fact, but on Friday I was taking part in our monthly patron cast. That's a long form call-in show that I do with the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. That one actually went for 6 hours on Friday while Taryn was recording our preview talking about Keisha, and he was with Puya Zambakili and one of our newcomers, Phil Thompson. You're going to hear that 1 second. So I'm going to be here with you for the Tyler preview, and then Taryn's going to take you the rest of the way with the Keisha preview all in this podcast. Again, that patron cast, we talked a lot about the Big Brother cast, a lot about the things going on behind the scenes at Rob Has a Podcast. You can check that out. I made this one available for people to check out. It was patron cast number 75, so it was a big milestone. That's available on our YouTube channel at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. And of course, it's a great time to get involved with everything we have going on in our patron community here at the start of the month at robhasawebsite.com/patron. But let's talk some Tyler. All right, here's another one that I've been really looking forward to, talking about the return of Tyler Crispin to a Big Brother. Let me bring in a man who has probably spent, I'm trying to do the math real quick. Oh, this is a Rachel Swindler math right now of what, like 98 days of like an hour a day plus all the round table. So easily has spent probably 250 hours talking about this man. Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how are you?
I'm on my way to 10,000. Someday I'll be a master of Tyler Crispin.
Yeah. A master of talking about Tyler. So you think 250, was that a conservative estimate?
Probably, honestly.
You know, you factor in all the Twitch streams and everything. Probably you're 350, easy.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right.
I wonder how he feels about that.
I don't know. Hard to say. Okay. All right.
Hopefully good.
Back with us to talk about Tyler Crispin. Very excited. Aman Adwin. Aman, how are you?
I'm great. Super duper excited that Tyler is back. Was one of my one of two wishes that I had for BB22. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure I'm getting it. So I am satisfied.
So Aman, I think it's well documented your Davon stand-up, but maybe it's a lesser known fact that you are a big Tyler guy.
And I don't know why. I don't know why people are gagging over this. I bring it to you every season, like almost every 2 months. I am antagonizing people with a tweet saying, "Oh, by the way, Tyler's great." And then it's like I get a whole new swath of people that are like, "What the hell, Aman? I can't." I was like, "I'm pretty sure you went through this 2 months ago." But
yeah,
I'm a big fan. I am. During BB20, like I was in two big drafts with my friends that I was really, really interested in. And at the beginning of the season, I just drafted Tyler and both of them on a whim. So I had a vested interest in watching his game. And then the more and more that I watched him, I was like, he's actually really, really good. And so, yeah, it's just been ride or die to the end.
I love the reminder tweet for people of, hey, don't forget, Tyler was great. I wish someday somebody will make a reminder tweet about me. If it ever happens, it's like, hey, remember when Rob interviewed Raven in the backyard in Big Brother 19?
Oh, that happens. That happens sometimes.
Okay. All right. And I'm very excited to have another newcomer here with us today to talk about Tyler. Please welcome Chris Alba. Chris, how are you?
I'm great. Super happy to be here. This has been my dream since I started watching Big Brother. So.
Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm from New Jersey. I went to school for theater and film, so I just love anything entertainment. After graduating, though, I was in cold call sales for a while, pretty much up until the pandemic. Now I'm just at home trying to figure things out. I'll be with it. All shows are starting, and that is all that matters to me at the moment. So,
okay, Chris, why did you want to be here for talking about Tyler Chrisman?
I love game bots. I love me some Nettas. I love me some. I just love people who are cold and don't care. They just want to go out there, cut some throats, play the game. And Tyler's one of those people.
Okay, so that's interesting to hear you describe him as a game bot, because I feel like that I personally wouldn't think of him that way. Amant, is that a commonly held belief? Tyler is a game bot?
Well, if we're like, if there were like a Kinsey scale for like game bot, we're here, and like, you know, more emotional player, we're here. I would say Tyler is definitely a little bit more on the game bot side. I don't know if I would like just, I don't know if I would simply call him that, but I definitely understand where Chris is coming from.
Taryn, I think it's interesting, and I was thinking a little bit about this before we came on today, that I feel like that Tyler is such an interesting player to talk about, because to hear Chris call him game bot, I think that that's like an interesting, that's part of him, but he also has that he's the game bot with like the emotion chip, where that he's able to, I believe, create like really deep connections with people, and then people feel like it's real. Tyler's my best friend. I love this man. He is amazing. And then he's also able to then go back to game bot mode and then take that person out, and then the person is incensed. How could you use me? We were friends.
Yeah, he's very much like, he's a game bot with like the fatal flaw of having a little too much heart, and that he couldn't cut the right people at the
end. But I was just saying that like he's so good at like forming connections with people that it's almost hard for him to then be a game bot, because people feel so betrayed because he makes such a personal connection with him, and to him it's like, hey, I was just playing the game.
Yeah, and I think there's something about his eyes. There's something about the way that he talks to you. I think that he, I think that it's very easy to project onto Tyler who you want him to be to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that happens with the people in the house. I think it happens with the fans who watch him, who wanted him to be somebody else when he came out of the house. He's very like blank slate in that way, but he's mm-hmm. still has a very distinct personality.
Okay.
I think that's like a reason as to why he's such a polarizing fixture, because I have a few friends that we talk about Big Brother all the time, and they absolutely detest him. They find him weird. They find him just like, they just can't get a read on him. And I'm like, that's why he's so good at what he does. Like, 'cause you can't get it. That's the whole point. So yeah, I definitely get that.
Well, his Big Brother 20 season is just like an epic saga of like all the different twists and turns that it takes. But let's talk about Tyler at the start of that season. And Chris, that I would often refer to Tyler during Big Brother 20. And I think that people think that I'm anti-Tyler. I really think that he's an incredible player. I took him in the draft, famously, I was rooting for him to win throughout the season. Chris, but I feel like that Big Brother 20 was like a sitcom with yet all these like kooky characters, but Tyler was like the nucleus, like main lead of the show.
Yeah, Tyler, right from the beginning, he kind of just grabbed the season and didn't let it go until the final two, and the people around him were just kind of trying to figure out what was going on, kind of bouncing back and forth off each other, while Tyler just kind of puppeteered pretty much everything that was going on around him.
Yeah, and things went so well for him in the early going, Amon, where that he was really just like drafted into the perfect alliance for him in level 6.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of these players. I mean, we've had conversations about the pros and cons of winning the first HOH, right? And I feel like he was one of those players that won the first HOH and then knew exactly what to do with it. And, you know, getting into level 6 and sort of like having his pick of the litter, and having the chance to sort of like have safety and then survey the rest of the land. I just think that he kind of just set himself up really, really well in that beginning stage. And it was kind of hard to knock him off his pedestal once he was up there. It was really hard.
Taryn, I think that this is important to think about as we get ready to watch the start of a new season. So how much agency did Tyler have in the formation of Level 6? Or was it sort of like as it was presented on the show where it's like, hey, well, we need another guy. What about Tyler?
Well, the thing about Tyler, I don't think that he was necessarily instrumental in creating Level 6 as an alliance, but he basically had the pick of the litter. He could choose to work with anybody he wanted. Swaggy wanted to work with him. Bailey wanted to work with him. Fessy and them wanted to work with him. He was fully considered to be like on the side of that Faute side. And then he was also with JC and Casey, and he had good enough relationships with Brett and Winston that when they were forming things, like, yeah, they wanted to pull him in. He obviously was very close to Haley at this point. He got close to Angela. So
and
it wasn't
you
necessarily
didn't mention Sam was another person that was he had like 9 ride or dies.
Yes, and so it wasn't that he like created an alliance. He basically just watched them form and then chose how he wanted to interact with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chris, what is it about him that makes so many people, this is a guy that I want to work with? Was it that he won the first HOH, or is there something about him?
I think there's something about him. He's Tyler came into the season as a super fan, but he doesn't look like your regular Big Brother super fan. He doesn't look like an Ian or a Nicole. They kind of cast him as like a surfer bro. Kind of like a Jay, somebody who leaves first, and then he kind of just proved to be this mastermind. Like you, I feel like people just look into his eyes and they see back whatever they want to see.
Yeah. Amon, yeah, he does have like a great disguise of being like the surfer guy where that people feel like, well, he's the surfer guy and that in Big Brother, you don't have to worry about that person. He's just going to be really laid back and chill. He's not going to be super schemey. And then also, again, that, you know, he may not say a lot to people. And I think that that does make people feel like that he's not up to all the things that he is.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest deep con that I've seen in a while from Big Brother casting, because they really, in his intro package, they made it seem like he was like, you know, this airhead, like totally nautical bro. Like he even said, I think it was like one of the questions was, what's going to be like the hardest thing for him to overcome? And he said his brain. And it's like, this is a complete antithesis of that entire intro package. And when his mom came onto the season later on in the season, like talking about, oh, he's never surfed a day in his life. I went back and I watched
it. He goes bowling.
Like, yeah, well, he never said that he was a surfer, but he was a lifeguard. So I don't know why we were projecting stuff onto him too. So it's just like the biggest blind side for everybody, including us. So I just, he really just turned everything for a loop. And I think especially during that first week for him being HOH, everybody just felt like, oh, it's Tyler. He's so easy to talk to. I can probably get him to come over to our side. Like, come on, Tyler, let's work together. Come on, let me show you how to play Big Brother. And he knew what he was doing the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because now he's not going to have that advantage. Everybody has watched him play. Nobody's mm-hmm. going to be drawn in by the, oh, he's just a surfer, bro. He's not like a huge fan of the show. He doesn't know what he's doing necessarily. That part of his game will need to adapt a little bit because they watched him do it.
Mm-hmm. Taryn, could you talk a little bit more about Tyler's role in Swaggy C going out second in that season? Because I think it's very important if Bailey is also hypothetically going to be a part of this cast as well.
Yes. So during Tyler's HOH, he was playing both sides. He was very close to Swaggy C. He had kind of a thing with Swaggy and Scotty and some other things with like Swaggy and Fessy and them. But he ultimately was deciding that he wanted to work with the Level 6 side. And so at the last minute, he tricked Caitlin into flipping her vote, and they blindsided Summer of Steve 2018, and Sam stayed in the house. So heading into the following HOH, Caitlin manages to win the HOH and it's chaos is reigning. Tyler is now doubling down on the trickery that he pulled on Caitlin, trying to convince her that Swaggy wants her gone and that there's, you know, a lot of tension there. There was a lot of tension there between Caitlin and Swaggy because she was getting into fights with Haley about Fessy and Bailey got involved and Swaggy made comments about Caitlin to Tyler that Tyler was able to relay to Caitlin to make her upset with Swaggy. And, you know, the rest is history. She backdoors him and he goes. It's very similar. You know, we talked about Kacer. Kacer started his season with Cappy, eventually split. And then very publicly and very like dramatically took Cappy out of the game. Tyler took a different route. When he split with his original partner, he used somebody else to do it for him. And even though Swaggy kind of saw that, I think Tyler might be behind this, he was able to fade back into the background after making the hit. But to your point about Bailey, she was not pleased. She eventually came around only to be betrayed again. So it'll be interesting to see how that relationship develops.
Yeah, Chris, could you talk a little bit about Tyler's game from that point on as it's really going back and forth in the level 6 versus Faute war?
Yeah, so right away, Tyler, he won that first HOH. And what surprised me the most about him was that even though he was super fan, he didn't try to play it safe that first week. He was okay with that blindside. And then from then on, they just kind of kept blindsiding the other side of the house pretty much every single week, even when they had the power. So Tyler was just, he knew how to give a good TV. I think that was his point. He didn't want to be like a BB17, BB18 James, where he was ruining all the blindsides. Tyler kind of just gave us that. I know he wasn't like the funnest person in the diary rooms and stuff, but at least he was
fine. And if I could just put a finer point on that, because you know I famously got heat for saying that Tangela was boring, but I always thought that Tyler that he's gonna give you, I think, a really exciting game. And I think that part of BB20 that we haven't gotten to yet is that his side was up by so much. It really was a lot of like running out the clock. The first half of Big Brother 20 is probably, you know, the best half of Big Brother in 10 years. Like, it was so exciting week after week. It's some of the most fun that I've had doing the podcast talking about a season. And he's behind so much of the swings that go back and forth. And I really think that in a season of All Stars being there, especially not having being in a part of a showmance that's just trying to run out the clock because they're up by so much, that I think that he could be a very active player if he's able to get his feet under him, Aman.
I think so too. I mean, like Taryn said, he's not going to be able to play exactly the same game as before, but at the same time, I feel like it's kind of hard to change who you are as a person. And even though people do plan on going into their All-Star seasons doing the complete opposite of what they've already done, I feel like you usually can't help but slip back into the same patterns. And I feel like if he's able to lay low, at least in the first couple of weeks, he'll get his claws in again. People are going to want him on their side. They're going to think that he's on their side. It's just going to be, and even if they're doubting it, because they doubted it in BB22 and they still let him do whatever that he was going to do. So, and also I think what I like about Tyler is that he is okay letting go of some alliance members when he know that the jig is up. You know what I mean? You're not going to see, like, Winston went home right after Swaggy C did. You're not going to see him try and stick his neck too far out. If it's done, it's done. And he will move on. He will recapitulate and he will, you know, move on to the next week. So I like that about him as well. He's very like future oriented. Like, he thinks about like the next step before anybody else does.
Taryn, he also had a power app. Don't forget about the cloud. He never told anybody.
Not until they were gone. Yeah.
Yep.
Tyler really was, you know, I think one part of him too is that he's very capable of working with a lot of different kinds of personalities. Mm-hmm. You look at this cast, and I don't think there's anybody on this cast that Tyler couldn't get along with. He got along with the bros, he got along with mm-hmm. the Sams, the Caitlins, the Baileys, the Caseys, like the Haleys, like every single kind of person except for maybe Rockstar. He was able to get along. I don't see any rock stars on this cast though, so I think he'll be fine. That's definitely in his favor. However, I think that he gets kind of tired. It drains him to have to work these people all the time. What we saw on Big Brother 20 was at times, you know, Caitlin, who was a particularly draining player, drained him a lot, and he had to just like let it go until like he was like, okay, fine. And then he let it go and it was fine. And then Sam, over the course of almost the entire season, he found himself just like, I just can't keep this up. You just do whatever you want, which ultimately, again, he only lost by one vote. And so if he'd been able to keep it up, who knows what would have happened.
Yeah, there's this famous picture during the early days of BB20 of Caitlin and Tyler in the backyard, and Caitlin is just like cuddled up like in his lap, just like using him as a support system, and he is just sitting there like, oh my god, I cannot do this anymore. So he's really going to have to learn how to not spread himself so thin, or maybe just be a tad bit more judicious on who exactly he is allowing to like enter his space, because not everybody, like, you're either going to get a Caitlin, a Sam, or you're going to get people that are a little bit more independent that you can still work with, like Casey. You know what I mean? So I think that that's definitely a lesson that he'll have to learn going into this one.
Yeah, Chris, do you think that that was such a big part of why he had such a tight friendship with Casey in the house? Because that she is ultimately like very little drama or maintenance in terms of being a friend and an ally to Tyler?
Yeah, that could definitely be something. I never really thought of that, but Casey's just such a solid presence, and he was dealing with such chaotic players that just him being able to bounce off of her probably grounded his game a lot, or else he probably would have lost it. If I was in the house with Caitlin for 4 weeks, I don't know what I would do. So the patience Tyler has is like one of the probably best skills in his toolkit for Big Brother, I think. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good point too. Ultimately, the two people that Tyler is closest to are Casey and Angela, who are both very like independent, you know, steady presences that don't like need him. Everybody else who wanted and needed Tyler so bad, they were constantly like wanting something from him. Whereas Casey and Angela mostly just existed and helped, provide to him, and it was a much more like a mutual relationship.
Aman, yeah. Could you talk a little bit about the development of the relationship with Angela? Because this was not like a traditional Big Brother relationship, where a lot of times these people come into the Big Brother house and they are booed up from a very early phase of the game, where this like kind of didn't happen until like halfway through.
Yeah, it kind of snuck up on all of us. Mm-hmm. I feel like we got like a little bit of hints of it here and there, like in the diary room. They were obviously asking the both of them questions about the other, and then we would see a session with Angela where she's like, I don't know what Tyler does, but he just always smells so good. And just eventually they're in bed together. I think it's like, what is it, like week 8, week 9, something like week 10, something like that. And I think what was really like the impetus for all of this was like the big blow up with Bailey, and like how much he like went to Angela afterwards, and Angela was such a comforting presence for him. And then after that, it just seemed to get snowball, and then all of a sudden they're confessing their love for one another in the bed at night. I'm like, all right. And I mean, you know what, and I might catch me a little bit of heat for this, I don't really give a damn. Yeah, so y'all can come for me. But I tend to agree with like the sentiment that you had, in that like, because of the fact that Angela is such a cool, calm, and collected character, the showmance of it all wasn't that interesting to watch. I mean, they're both great players individually, but if you're looking for like sparks in terms of showman's material, they're not that. So I feel like that's where you were coming from. And that's why people get so like, you know,
just to be like analytical about it. You know, I feel like that I'm not a big showman's guy anywhere. In the Big Brother, you know, when you have like a couple like Brendan and Rachel, like they have external conflict in that they're fighting with the house constantly of like everybody's trying to get them. They're fighting with everybody. And then they also have internal conflict. They fight with each other in the house, whereas that Tyler and Angela were no conflict internally. They got along perfect. I don't even remember them having an argument on Big Brother 20. And then they also kept their relationship a secret. So it wasn't like that as a pair. They were like, hey, screw all of you. It wasn't
like a me against the world like Rachel and Brendan. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then it was on the show, it was like a lot of schmoopy segments, which at a time in the game when there was almost nothing going on. So it was very heavy on the schmoopy talk in the last third. That was my big complaint about the whole thing.
Too much schmoopy.
Yeah. Chris, Amon was talking about how in the fallout of the confrontation with Bailey that everybody remembers from Big Brother 20, can you just talk about Tyler's role in that? Why was Bailey so upset with Tyler?
That was after her power app got exposed, right? So her power app got exposed. The worst thing about that fight, though, I feel like, because Tyler is such a, I don't think he doesn't like hurting people. I actually, to prepare for this, I watched an interview that he did with Casey recently, but he talked about like his social awareness and not stepping on people's toes and making those real connections with people. And I think he really did want to keep that throughout his game. He's not a fighter. He's not somebody who likes confrontation. And then I think he actually did feel bad about that fight with Bailey. I don't think that's something he ever wanted to happen or to escalate to the way it escalated to. But he did tell Bailey that he didn't need her vote and he didn't get her vote. So that did cost him the win, I think.
I can't remember what happened first. And Taryn, you might be able to answer. Was it before? So he... He found like Bailey told him about the hacker twist, or he found out about it, and then she was asking him during was it his HOH? It was somebody's HOH who would be going up as a replacement nominee, and she suggested that it might be Angela, and then he said probably going along with it, and then she took that to mean like, oh yeah, like, well, you said Angela, and then all of a sudden he's lying about it because to the rest of the house when Haley calls for the house meeting. And the next thing you know, it's like a big blow up. Now, was that before or after he did like the whole sunglasses thing because he thought that Bailey was the hacker and put him up on the block and it really wasn't him. And then they were trying to clear her name. And I can't remember like the direct sequence of.
So it was the previous week that Bailey was the HOH and she told Rachel about her power to replace a nominee or something like that. Then that information got out there, but they couldn't reveal like where they heard it from because they were still blindsiding the other side. And so targeting Bailey because of her power. Then the hacker twist got involved, and the hacker twist was a convenient way for them to blame Bailey and say, this is why we're targeting Bailey. She must be the hacker. And she's the one that put Tyler up on the block. And they did also just like believe it too. Like they were in this mindset of, you know, Bailey has the power. She's not telling us about it. She targeted us. She's probably working against us. It wouldn't surprise me if she was the hacker and is the one that got this to happen. Haley felt guilty that it seemed like Bailey was being targeted because of something that wasn't true, that because she was really the hacker. So she told the entire house, I am the hacker, not Bailey. She shouldn't be targeted for this. And Tyler was essentially like, it doesn't matter though. Like that was never the real reason why you were being targeted in the first place. You have a power. Like you're dangerous in this game because of your power. And And Bailey was like really upset about all of this, that like I didn't betray you, Tyler. He's like, I don't care. You don't understand. It's a game move. You have a power. It doesn't matter if I think you betrayed me or not. I have to get rid of you. And Bailey was more focused on the relationship aspect of it. And we see this kind of disconnect, a similar kind of disconnect, although in a much more dramatic way, on the challenge with Casey and Bailey. But Bailey is very, very focused on these relationships that she builds with people. And she expects those relationships and those loyalties to be held to the same standard that she holds them to. And so she was very upset with Tyler that that A, he was turning on her, and B, he was turning on her for reasons that she didn't like. Mm-hmm. And that he was... In the way that he was telling her, like, it doesn't matter that you're not the hacker. She was like, no, it does matter that I'm not the hacker. I didn't betray you. And he didn't care that she didn't betray him. And that hurt her as well, because there was a disconnect in how much they cared about the relationship.
Mm-hmm. You know, Chris, I never really put two and two together with this, but I feel like that this incident with Bailey, where, you know, Tyler takes this, you know, very personally, that, you know, he's like considered like a villain after Bailey is yelling at him, and he's very upset about this. That I almost feel like that does this now fundamentally change the how active he is in the game in the second half, where now he really, you know, seeks the comfort of having this showmance, which is quieter and not as out of control as his whole first half of the game, and to the point where he ends up sort of like being paralyzed in terms of making this one last killer decision in the game, where he really could have been seen as a villain had he made a decision to cut either Casey or Angela coming down to the home stretch of the game.
I always found that this week interesting with Tyler's game, because I felt like up until this point, Tyler, even when people are going home, he still kind of tried with them. But with the Bailey eviction, he kind of just gave up. And after this point, he did lose sight of the end game. You know, he started worrying more about being with Angela and not being a bad guy, essentially, to the public. I think he's a person who really cares about how he is perceived. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's gonna do in All Stars. You know, like, we've seen how he takes criticism after the game. I feel like he might come to All Stars and maybe overcorrect a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's also worth noting that I think he seems older than he actually is. That Amon, did you know how old is he in Big Brother 20?
I think he's 23, 24 yeah. in Big Brother 20.
So he's a young guy going through a lot of stuff in Big Brother 20.
I think the youngest, might be the youngest on the cast of All Stars, depending on who's in the cast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Taryn, can you talk about what we're talking about, how Tyler started to look at the end game? We talked for so long on the podcast about the level 6 Civil War is coming. How did Tyler go about positioning himself to ultimately come out on top in the level 6 Civil War, where we were trying to figure out all the different ways? All right, is Brett going to be able to pull this off? Is there anybody that's going to be able to knock out Tyler and Angela and Casey?
He bet on both sides. He was working closely with Casey and Angela on one side, and he was working closely with JC and Brett on the other. And if either side won, then he would have just been like, yep, great job, guys, we did it. Obviously, he was way more invested in the Angela Casey side. Those were his favorite people. But JC and Brett both trusted him so much that they kept telling him all of their plans of betrayal. And he was able to delay them just enough. And, you know, then the buyback happened and Scotty came back in, which also delayed them to the point where it all happened on the double eviction. And just like that, Brett goes home. And the Civil War gets, ended before it really even started. That was really what he was. He was in the central position. Casey and Angela trusted him completely. JC trusted him completely. Brett trusted him enough. And that's he was fine either way.
Mm-hmm. Amon, the big decision point for Tyler that people look back to is the Final Four, where, you know, if he was going to be the winner of that game, then he really needs to go all out and win that Final Four veto, and then probably knock out Casey. If he goes to the end with Angela, then he ends up probably being the winner of the season. But he seemed very reluctant to want to go all out on that competition, which seems like one that he could have won.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we talked about earlier when we said, you know, the game bought with a bit of the emotional chip. And I know that there are naysayers to this theory. Some people believe that Angela still would have won. I think that he probably has a bet. I mean, I feel like his game is so good that he, I mean, because like, people forget that he almost won this way too. Like, if it were just for a few, like two stray votes, he would have probably won the game. But I do worry about things like that. And I think that's why a lot of people, if the alleged casting rumors are true, a lot of people are pleased to see that Angela will not be back, because that's just, while it is something that's good for his game to have someone that's always a number for him, like, it's obviously a flaw. So I really am interested in seeing how he's going to progress through BB22 with no romance. I mean, because he doesn't even really need one, because he's really, really good at creating the friendships as well. So,
Taryn, was this his plan all along heading into that Final Four, or we have no way of knowing exactly what he was thinking heading into that?
I believe there was a, I don't even know, Snapchat, or I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what it was. Instagram story where he pointed out, like, basically his boot order. And that was a little bit earlier in the season. But in that sort of like pointing things out, I do believe that Casey was the last person to go, essentially. Mm-hmm. That he did kind of always plan on bringing Casey to the end. Then I think the Angela romance got in the way a little bit. And it conflicted with his original plan, and which is weird, because Tyler was such an adaptable player who really was all over the place, but seemingly couldn't adapt to changing that initial plan. Felt bad about it, I guess. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but for whatever reason,
didn't want to be the villain.
He didn't let his feelings get in the way. And I think that maybe that was the problem, that he probably wanted to go to the end with Angela because he felt these romantic feelings for her, but was like, no, can't let my feelings, my game plan was Casey, can't let my feelings get in the way. And the desire to not let his feelings get in the way might have actually prevented him from thinking about it clearly, and which would have allowed him to realize that Angela was a much better bet to bring to the end strategically as well as, mm-hmm. you know, feelingsly.
Yeah. And then Chris, can you just talk about Tyler in the final two, because that it seemed like that there was still a path there against Casey, who I don't recall Casey giving one of the all-time great final two performances. For Tyler to really, you know, own his game, it seemed like that he also had some trouble with really being able to you know, pound the table and tell that jury exactly like how good of a game he played.
Yeah, I think it all comes down again. As soon as he started his showmance with Angela, he lost sight. I think he, like Taryn said, really wanted to go to the end with Casey. They formed the Coast to Coast Alliance. He wanted to stay true to that, and I guess show that he did have a loyalty in the end of the game. And I think on most seasons he can beat Casey, but just the fact that he did lose control of his game, mm-hmm. at that Final Four, Casey was pretty much the person who took him to Final Three, took him to Final Two, and then he didn't really own up to his game. He kept bringing up not using a power app, which shouldn't, you know, it's not really that big of an achievement. Like, a lot of people in the house didn't have power apps.
Yeah.
That's the one thing about his speech that I keep remembering him just talking about his power app.
Right. Right. Okay. So Tyler comes out of the show, and Casey is the winner, and, you know, it seems like you know, everybody you know, wants to keep talking about, you know, everything from his game. Taryn, I don't know if it's necessarily worth spending too much time on, but how do you think that the Big Brother 20 experience and his reception after the season might have changed Tyler heading back to a potential All-Star season?
I mean, I think it took a toll on him. I think that he spent a lot of time having to like recover from this, you know, dramatic change in circumstances. People talking about you all the time. They're criticizing you. They're praising you. It's a lot to take, especially for somebody that's very young and that hasn't experienced it before. You come out of the house. It's difficult for everyone. But it's especially difficult even if you are loved, which Tyler was, but he was also, you know, it was also, there were other, he had his detractors, as Amon learns every 2 months. Basically, though, a lot of focus was on Tyler. He was, the entire season was Tyler. I think it was a lot. And for somebody that is, like, that has his personality, he's kind of naturally a shy guy, and he sticks to himself and he just likes to be low key. And I think that it was hard for him to sort of adjust to all of that. And so I imagine that it was probably a hard decision about whether to come back, but he does love the show so much. He does have friends in the community. And I think the similar to Ian, I think the allure of like All-Stars might have been the thing or something that was able to get him back in to be like, okay, we'll do it again. I'm more prepared this time. I'm like ready emotionally. Yeah. But I think that he might, to your point, I think that he might come in and just be like a little bit gun shy. He came in the first time guns blazing. He was ready to go all over the place. I think he might come in this time and be a little bit more hesitant. He doesn't want to piss people off. He doesn't want to ruin his reputation. He doesn't want to, you know, he might be playing a little bit more scared than we're used to seeing Tyler play.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the really fascinating thing to watch from him, because how did this first experience change him? Obviously, we know he wants to come back and get the win, but also, you know, with these players that they're also looking to sort of change the narrative. What's the narrative that he wants to build? Is it to change the narrative, Amon, about how, hey, I'm not the guy who couldn't get it done the first time. I'll show you what I'm capable of in this game. Or was he so scarred by the experience of the people calling him the villain of like, hey, I'm not going to do anything to be the villain this time. And I want to just be the golden boy the whole way through this time around.
I tend to believe it's more of the former, because I agree that he's definitely going to have to come back into this maybe with a little bit less guns a-blazing. But I also think that he's just one of those people that just likes to win. I mean, there was that HOH competition where he didn't even need to be HOH. It was him and Sam that were left up on that thing. And Sam was like, Tyler, please get your ass down. He's like, one more. It's like, so I know that like that doesn't go away. Like, that never goes away. So I'm really, really excited to see how he's able to temper that, because I feel like he, of course he doesn't want, he didn't win by one vote, right? But I don't feel like he is necessarily a Paul. You know what I mean? I feel like him and Paul may have ran into similar issues, but Paul is like up here where Tyler's like a little bit down, more like down here. You know what I mean? I feel like there's,
as a player,
definitely less,
or as a threat.
Sorry?
As a player, or
like,
a threat?
I meant as in like the errors of Paul.
Okay.
Like how wrong Paul was. He's like way more, like there was just a lot more going on with his game where I feel like Tyler, with a few minor changes here and there, would have probably won. So I feel like it's less about proving that he can actually win, and it's more about like, let me learn from my first game. And I agree with Taryn in that, like, the season probably did take a toll on him. Like at the end of the season, like he was in tears when he got AFP, because he thought that everybody hated him. So I think he wants to go in and, you know, be like, I'm actually really cool. Like, I'm sorry that I pissed you off, but I just want to play Big Brother. It's my favorite game. Hello.
I think an important part to note too about the jury situation with Tyler is that all of his allies voted for him. All of his enemies did not vote for him, because people often think about like, oh, well, Tyler, he got too close to people and then they were too burned by him when he turned on them. But in reality, the people that Brett voted for him, JC voted for him, like the people that he screwed over the most did vote for Tyler. It was the people that were not really there to see what he was doing that didn't vote for Tyler. And Haley changes her vote in the final speeches because she sees for the first time, oh my God, this guy's really good. I didn't realize, which is why I never, she did try to target him, but I didn't realize what he was doing. She's able to see it in the final speeches. Fessy, of course, never saw it. And Rockstar didn't really see it. And even Bailey, I think that Bailey didn't really fully see the game that he was playing. Bailey was closer to Casey, and that was a big reason why she was going in that direction, which also is going to influence some of the other members of her alliance as well. So I do think that the polarizing nature of this season, where there were two very separate groups, didn't help him when it came to the jury vote. I think that if there are people heading into All Stars thinking that Tyler, great player, but not a great jury manager, probably not going to be able to win a jury vote, I think that's very wrong. And on top of that, I think an All-Star jury is much more likely to vote for a player like Tyler.
So I want to talk about some of the hypothetical people that are out there in terms of this cast and their relationships with Tyler. Now, Chris, this may be an unconventional opinion, but I think that Tyler actually caught a big break the rumors are true, in fact, that one of the hypothetical people in Casey, who was his ride or die in the season, that she was rumored to be part of this cast, hypothetically. And now, hypothetically, it doesn't sound like she's going to be part of this cast. And I felt like that was going to paint them as a really big targeted pair. I feel like that Tyler could have easily fallen into some of the, habits that ultimately helped isolate him from people in the Big Brother 20 game. I think that Casey not being there is an incredible break for Tyler. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps him. Because even if Casey was in the house, I think, and they get put up together, I think they target Tyler before Casey. Because even though she won, she just seems like a less threatening person. Tyler just comes off. Oh, people who watch the show know that he is a gamer. He knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. So, yeah, I think it definitely does help him to not have Angela or Casey in there, people that he really knows from Big Brother 20.
Yeah.
It definitely makes him more approachable, right? Like, if you're in the BB22 house and you see Tyler and Casey, like, it's the first night, right? And obviously Tyler and Casey are probably sitting next to each other. You see them talking with one another. Like, you feel like you have to approach them as a pair. But if he's by himself, it's just a little bit less intimidating. And you feel like, like we talked about the wounded bird edit, especially hypothetically speaking, if this hypothetical cast were hypothetically tuned in to who might hypothetically be on the season, and then hypothetically speaking, Casey is not on the season, hypothetically, they'll be like, oh, Tyler's alone. Hypothetically.
So. I'm going to disagree with you guys on this. I think it's actually a massive blow to Tyler's game that Casey and Josh may not be there. The reason being, I think that, first of all, Tyler's never the kind of person to just like pair up with Casey and they're just a duo for the whole season. He was a duo with Casey the whole season the first time he played, and he was very separate from her in a lot of ways. I think he's very capable of that. Also, I think Casey goes in with a much bigger target than Tyler does, which is not how it should be. But I think that she's remembered as being the bigger comp threat, even though they were pretty equal. I think she comes in as the winner. I think she comes in as potentially even more visibly connected because she's connected to Josh, who might be connected to Christmas, who might be connected to other people. Plus, she comes in with drama with Bailey. Bailey is going to be focusing all of her, energy on Casey. And Tyler gets to be the person next to Bailey. Like, yeah, Casey can be pretty bad sometimes. I'm totally with you. And Bailey's now not focusing on should I trust Tyler, should I not trust Tyler after all of our history. She's instead like, Casey, I hate her. I can't speak to her. Tyler, please help me. That's a great spot for him to be in. I think that there's just using Casey's connections. It connects him to a lot of those people like Josh and Christmas and whoever. And while still being able to be like, those guys are crazy. I'm not really with them. So I think it would have been really, really good for him to have those people there. Plus, he can. It's just another person that you can rely on that can win competitions. That's so massive in a game like this. So I think Tyler, if he's expecting Casey and Josh to be there, if he walks into that house and doesn't see them, I think he's going to be like, oh, no.
Oh, this is interesting.
My pre-gaming plans have been messed up.
Okay. Oh, so, Taryn, you're saying something that's blowing my mind because, all right, so these players who were pre-gaming, they go into sequester, and I'm thinking it's like, you know, because I come from Survivor. On the Survivor cast, before the game starts, you know who the other, you see that you're in the same place with all the other players. You know, you travel to the island with them. You see them all the time. So this is very interesting. So Tyler goes into sequester thinking Casey's going to be on the season, goes into a hotel room. 2 weeks later, they blindfold him, bring him to the studio, and then you're on. Okay, let's meet the rest of the cast, and Casey's not there. That's
voted and blindsided.
Wow.
Yeah. Tyler's gonna be like, production, shook. You bamboozled me.
Yeah.
You tricked me into coming on this season by telling me that Josh and Casey were gonna be here. And they were never on, were they?
Yeah.
It was all a big trick to get me here.
Yeah.
And see, like I totally understand that, Taryn, but like on the flip side, if
coronavirus test, yeah,
exactly.
If Casey is targeted because all of the reasons that she's a good ally are some of the reasons that she's a bad one as well. So, like, if Casey is targeted, don't you want to put Tyler up next to her because you know that he'll fight for her? You know that he's an automatic vote for her. Like, doesn't he? If she, in the event that she or they can't win a competition, like, aren't they both kind of screwed because, you know, by association?
I don't think so. I think Tyler is very capable of being like, we're not that close, you know? Like, we were friends on the show, but we didn't really hang out that much afterward. I learned my lesson. I can't take her to the end. She's now on the challenge. She's friends with all those challenge people. Like, that's not really my thing anymore. Like, we're cool, but like, I need to find better allies.
But these are all stars. I know not everybody here is a, you know, amazing, amazing player. But I think a lot of those people are going to be like, yeah, okay, Tyler. Sure.
I agree. But like, if he backs it up by like not hanging out with her and genuinely working with other people, which I think he's capable of doing, then I really feel like if there were a pair to be seen, it's Josh and Casey, the people that were partying in Florida very publicly when people were not sequestered. I think they're seen as the pair more so than Tyler and Casey. If he does that, granted, this is a hypothetical on a hypothetical on a hypothetical at this point.
Based on this hypothetical, like, do you think a player like Davon would see Tyler and Casey in a house together and buy that they're not working together? I feel like there's no way that would happen.
I mean, here's the thing. I genuinely think that Tyler will have closer allies than Casey on that season. I think that she really wouldn't be his ride or die.
Well, let's not spend too much more time on this because that if Casey is not going to be there, according to our best hypothetical guesses at this point, we could brand steal that season and see how it all goes. But Chris, let's circle back to Bailey and Tyler's plan for Bailey. We talked about how Bailey might look at it in our hypothetical preview of Bailey, but how do you think that Tyler looks at Bailey?
I think they're fine. I don't think Tyler has any like feuds or drama from people outside the house. I actually saw like people on Twitter like, oh, pre-game alliance Tyler and Bailey, because Swaggy and Angela have been like interacting on Instagram. I think that maybe other people on the cast will see Tyler and Bailey as people who don't really get along, but I think that they'll be fine together. And I think Tyler definitely knows how to bring her like to his side, especially in a cast like this. They don't really know anyone on here, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that Angela and Swaggy being like super chummy is definitely a sign that Tyler and Bailey probably were speaking a decent amount before the season. That said, Tyler was always closer to Swaggy than he was Bailey. And again, I've talked about this before, but when you trusted somebody on your first season, mm-hmm. you trusted them and they betrayed you, and you trusted them again and they betrayed you again. You can go into the next season feeling like, okay, we're cool now. I trust them now. In the back of your mind, you're just going to be thinking, can I trust them? And yeah. if you're Tyler, you're going to be thinking, does Bailey trust me? Or is she going to turn on me before I turn on her? And that kind of thinking can really spiral into some bad situations. And so it would not surprise me if they tried to work together, but things go sour kind of quickly.
Yeah, because we did talk about that with like the whole Devon and Nicole thing. But the one thing that I think that's a little bit different is that like they do sort of have two significant others on the outside. So I wonder like what the conversation was like, where it's like, okay, guys, like let's just get a drop it. You guys need each other. Like let bygones be bygones. Go into that house and just wreck everything else. So I wonder if there was a conversation, maybe it's back. Maybe this relationship can be backed up with a little bit of gold. You know what I mean? But it's still really, really, because I mean, how much time did they really spend with one another before the season even began? Because as I believe, I think that Tangela, they kind of just stick to themselves. You don't really see them interacting too much with any of the other alumni. They kind of just, they go on vacation, they go on whatever beach that they're on, and they are living their best life. So if there had been some more interaction offline between these two, then maybe I would have a little bit more confidence. But I just feel like it's a really, really, it's really dicey.
Well, I think that their interests are mutually aligned, especially because, I think that Swaggy especially thinks a lot about like branding and marketing. And I feel like mm-hmm. that he's like, okay, this is good for Swaggy and Bailey brand to go far into the game. I think that Angela certainly thinks about the Tangela brand and mm-hmm. okay, this is good for Tangela, for Tyler to go far into this game. And I do think that all of their interests are sort of like, hey, it's good for all of us if we end up working together and getting as far into the game. We don't know who's coming for us. At least we can control this and try to keep each other. So I don't know necessarily if they're going to be best friends, but I don't think that they're going to target each other.
Yeah, and them being like the only two people in the hypothetical cast from Big Brother 20 has to bond them. It has to bond them.
Okay.
And I'll be interested for that dynamic. You know what I mean? Because we talk about like how BB20 is kind of like the season six mm-hmm. of BB All Stars 1. So, I mean, it'd be interested to see like them sort of come together that way. And then next sort of like BB20 against the rest of the house, which might actually not happen, seeing as how hypothetically speaking, Casey and Josh are out. So that kind of like lessens the profile. But mm-hmm. who knows?
I always think about Danielle and Marcellus on the original All-Star season and how she screwed him over real bad in their original season. And he came back and he was so hesitant to trust her again.
Yeah.
And he just barely starts to, and then he gets burned again by Danielle. And so it's like, I feel like these situations are some of the more interesting ones coming into All-Star seasons like this.
Okay. Let's talk about some other positive relationships for Tyler in this hypothetical cast. Is there anybody else that looks like that is a really good fit for Tyler to work with?
I think Ian would want to work with Tyler.
I think
he can fit in with that crew, especially what I was thinking for Tyler was if there is a Josh, Casey, Christmas, whatever divide between them and the Janelle, Ian, Kaser, whoever, that he could actually probably play the middle a little bit. But without Josh and Casey, I think he can a little more firmly just kind of like get along with the Janelle crew. Although, we talked about this with Janelle. I think Janelle will probably be skeptical of the Tylers, Codys, and Memphises of the world. She played with Dan and Will. I'm not entirely sure how that will work out, but I think he'll try and I think he can fit in there. So it'll be interesting to see that.
Yeah. I think Cody's a good get as well. I mean, they both were runner-ups. Mm-hmm. I think they'll both kind of be viewed similarly. So I feel like that's a good good thing to snag. And I feel like they're both kind of like low key, kind of shy kind of guys. So I feel like they probably get along pretty well. So why not?
If he can blend in with like Cody and Memphis and be like, I'm just like you guys. And like everybody else views him as just like them. Like that's a good spot for him to be because he's not really like them. He was a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I also see him working with Nicole for some reason. I just
which one?
Hear,
oh God,
Nicole Frenzel. Oh God.
Okay, all right. Let's yeah. talk about this because I have a counterpoint.
I was saying like an anti-Brent alliance. No, but
anti-Brent alliance. How funny would that be on the live feed? It's like, oh God. Hey, you know that what? Guy Brent?
Yeah, it really would not surprise me.
Hey, wouldn't that be how weird would that be? Brent. That would be great. Like. It would be like, you know that guy Brent, and then, and then we cut back like, hey, we're final two. Okay, great. All right, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, no, I see him meshing well, Nicole. Though I do. Frenzel.
So I actually could see the opposite. And I feel like that I could see Nicole targeting Tyler here because I do think that I know Nicole gets blamed for a lot of things, but I do feel like that Nicole does think a lot about the other Big Brother showmances. And I do think that Nicole wants to be considered the top Big Brother showmance. And I think that was part of the friction where she never got along with Rachel, with Rachel Riley, and that she's competitive with Rachel and Brendan. And I think like, oh, well, Tyler and Angela, that I think that she wants to be competitive with them. And I also could feel like that she's going to come in maybe with a target on her back. Hey, what an easy person to paint the first target on than Tyler.
I could already hear it like, Tyler, are you lying to me?
yeah.
So, I do wonder if there's also like a bit of a thing because she's pretty aware of what people say about her online and talk about how she doesn't like to work with women. She's always trying to get rid of all the girls. She wants to be the last girl standing. So I do wonder if there's a bit of like an energy to her where she wants to come into this season, like proving people wrong a little bit. And what better trophy to take out other than Tyler, you know? So,
hey, Taryn, what do you think? Nicole, Frenzel, and Tyler. How do you think that is going to go?
I mean, Tyler was always the person who was willing to, like, if we go off of the assumption that Nicole goes in with very few allies, Tyler was always the person who was capable and willing to pick those people up and develop a relationship with them. So if she's on the outs, I could easily see him working on her. And if she has no other options, then something could happen.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is anybody here that would be anti-Tyler from this hypothetical cast list? Anybody gunning for Tyler?
Well, I heard the Danny Donato podcast today, and apparently she's not a big fan.
Yeah, based on like social media tweets. But I think they'll get along in person. It's definitely different when you watch somebody on TV and then you meet them and like, oh, no, I love this person. They're awesome. So it's hard to necessarily get a read unless something like is happening from real life interactions.
Tyler should not mention it. I feel like sometimes people feel like, let's just talk about it, get the tension over.
Exactly.
Like,
no,
I don't worry. I saw the tweets. I don't care. No, no, don't mention it. Pretend you never saw them. Let
Play
her think I got away
dumb.
With it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Play dumb. And like I said, like Tyler, I mean, he tends to stick to himself. Like if you check his social media, he's always with Angela doing something off somewhere in like the land of the unicorns. Like he's good. You know what I mean? So I feel like there really is no chance for him to really even have friction with anybody on this cast. You know what I mean? They might want to get him out because they consider him a threat. But in terms of like sociability, I think he's the only person that I'll be worried about is Bailey. That's it. And by proxy, maybe Bailey poisoning other people. But other than that, I think he's kind of solid.
Yeah, he's just so, he's so likable. You could just kind of like, he just seems like somebody you could just approach and talk to. It doesn't really matter like the age, the gender. Like he can just talk to anybody easily and make them like trust him. Which
even the Canadians like him. I mean, I think Aiko was just on her Instagram live talking about how like Angela and Tyler.
In
are
fairness,
great
I believe them. That many Canadians have a reputation for being very friendly and liking a lot of
but
people.
But this is Aiko Wong, though. Aiko Wong isn't just gonna. She's not going to just, you know, call anybody a good person. You know what I mean? It's Aika. So like, if Aika's saying it, I have to believe that they're just, you know, as chill as can be, as sweet as pie. Like, they don't want to ruffle any feathers. They're just trying to live their life. And if you bring that same energy into the house, I feel like it's a very inviting and warm presence, especially in a season like this where everybody's supposedly trying to gun for one another. So,
okay.
I don't know.
Any final thoughts on Tyler and his return?
I'm excited.
My wish
has been granted.
It's going to be exciting if he's there.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. If he can start the season, like if he, you know, he's able to win those, like at least one of those first UHOH and just start the season the way he started Roulette 20, we're in for a good time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do predictions on Tyler. Chris, do you have a prediction on how far Tyler can go this season?
I don't have a prediction. I don't get super attached to players. I just like seeing them play. But Tyler wouldn't surprise me if he, you know, if he left early, I wouldn't be surprised. But if he made a deep run, I'm not surprised either. He has the toolkit. He's very well-rounded. He's a good competitor, a good social game, and he's very strategic. He's probably one of the most well-rounded people on the cast, I think. So
yeah, definitely.
On paper, I think Tyler does very, very well. More and more that we talk about it, though, I get nervous. So, but you know what? No, I'm an emotional person and I don't give a damn. I think that Tyler is probably going to go very far. I don't know if he'll win. I don't have the same winner's juju in my head that I had for Davon, but I certainly have, like, I can see him making jury, and I'll say that at the very least.
Okay. Taryn, what about you?
I think Tyler goes in probably as the best player on the cast.
Wow.
And with that reputation, I think he is the biggest wild card on the cast in terms of how he will do. I think that he's that target on his back will never go away. And so it could come back to him at any point. So I think it's all over the board. I don't think there's any particular spot where I think he goes out.
Yeah, he has really high upside. I feel like through half of Big Brother 20, I think we were ready to sort of like put him into the pantheon with Dr. Will and Dan, and Derek, just like all time most, most perfect games played. And then to ultimately come away not even being a winner of that season. Yeah, I do think he has a very high upside. I think he's going to go far. I really do. I think that he's going to have some bumps along the road. But I just remember watching that guy in the first half of Big Brother 20 being so fast and then not being caught up with having a relationship that he is able to go away from. I think he's able to learn from some of the mistakes where he got too caught up in so many different relationships in the first half of the season. I think that he's able to come in. And also, he's a guy who, if you put him on the block, he could win a veto. He can win HOHs. So I think that he's also somebody who's going to be tough to get out of the house. I think that Tyler sticks around. I think he's going to be make a deep run. I don't think he's the winner, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him go very, very far again.
Yeah, one of my biggest, like I said, one of my biggest fears with Tyler is he comes back to Big Brother 22 and he plays, because he plays such a flashy game, Big Brother 20, but he plays like a more subtle Casey game and he loses because of it. Let's say he makes the final two, because an all-star cast would reward his first game. So he just, I feel like if he overcorrects, I think that could be one of his biggest flaws in this game specifically.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Chris, where can people keep up with more of what you're doing?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Straw Hat Chris, LOL. And that's Chris with no H. And sometimes I stream Mega Man on Twitch.
Mega Man?
Like old Mega Man.
Yeah, from which system?
Game Boy. Yeah,
Game Boy?
Yeah.
You can, oh my God, you can stream that? Holy crap.
Well, it's like an emulator.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, that's twitch.tv / Chris Alba.
Okay.
Again, with Chris and Noach.
All right. Well, Chris, great talking to you today. Aman, where can people keep up with all of your love for Davon and for Tyler?
Yes, you can follow me at Aman Adwin on Twitter, doing exactly what Rob said. You can also find me on the Drag Race podcast with Liana and Beth.
Okay. And of course, Taryn, everybody knows.
You can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren and twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong.
Okay, really looking forward to seeing Tyler come back for the All-Stars. This was a lot of fun to get to talk through their games. Okay, thank you so much. All right, everybody, there you have it. That's our Tyler Crispin preview. Again, thanks to Chris Alba for joining us and Amon once again. We're going to be getting into our Keisha preview coming up here in this episode in just a moment. But first, let me thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are our friends over at rockauto.com. Now, look, chain stores for auto parts have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they're reliably low. rockauto.com offers the best prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is perfect for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet, whether it's for your classic or daily driver. Get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered right to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Rob has a podcast in their How Did You Hear About Us section, so they know that we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Okay, we have our Keisha preview coming up. You're going to be hearing from Taren, from Puya Zambakili, and from newcomer Phil Thompson, who is very impressive in our audition process. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from Phil. I'm going to turn it over to Taren, Puya, and Phil to talk about Keisha.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. We are here to talk this time about another hypothetical member of the Big Brother 22 All-Star cast. It's somebody that I never thought we'd get back. It's Keisha from Big Brother 10, who was not in the rumor mill really much at all for a long time. And then we had some last minute shakeups, and it appears that we might actually see Keisha on our screens once again. Here to talk with me about it is Puya. How you doing, Puya?
I'm doing well, Taren. Who would have thought after all this time, one of the few names that the fans are always clamoring for is in the mix and could be there. It is the eve of her birthday to date this. It's only fitting that we talk about her.
Yes. And joining us to talk about Keisha, a new member of the podcast, it's Phil. How you doing, Phil?
Hey, what's up, Taren? Thanks for having me on. I also thought we would never see anyone from like before season 16, like ever again. So this is just really, really exciting. Should be great.
Yes. Can you just introduce us to you a little bit here? Who are you and what's your history with Big Brother?
So I'm a film student. Basically my biggest passions in life are film and reality TV. I've been a fan of, you know, Big Brother and Survivor and all that stuff for, you know, the past, I guess, you know, 5 years, but I've seen all these seasons like definitely more than once. And I think my love with reality TV and RHAP are like married together. So this is just super exciting to be able to actually talk about some of these players that I just have been watching for years.
Yeah. And on an All-Star season, no less. Yeah. We are here. We're going to talk about Keisha. She originally appeared on season 10 of Big Brother, was, I think, pretty widely considered to be one of the best seasons, if not the best. We've done a couple of season rankings. I believe it took the top spot both times that we did them. And Keisha's definitely a big part of it, Puya.
She really is. This was the back to basics season. No fancy stuff, nothing crazy, just relying on the players you have booked to be on the show. And Keisha brought entertainment in a way that no one else could really bring. was a part of a alliance that we have not really seen a similar alliance since. Just all fireworks, all fun times, but also no slouch in the strategy department either, no slouch in the thought processes either. Really had a good all-encompassing type of player in Keisha.
Yeah, I think right off the bat, I don't know if she immediately popped off the screen, but like, what were your thoughts on Keisha when you were first watching Big Brother 10, Phil?
When I first watched Big Brother 10, I definitely thought that like she was casted as like the Janelle like archetype. You know what I mean? She was going in as kind of like just, I guess, just like this, like a very fiery competitor, but I didn't expect much from her strategically. But then she was able to really align herself with players like April and Libra. And then she like really popped like after the second week, she just popped as a player and she basically stayed that way for the rest of the season. I was really, really, I love Keisha.
Yes. What is Keisha's story? Like, for anybody that did not watch Keisha, did not watch season 10, or maybe they just don't remember Keisha because, you know, season 10, people usually remember Dan, they remember the Renegades. What is Keisha's story here, Phil, on season 10?
So one of my favorite aspects of just reality TV is just the storytelling. And I think that Keisha, like a lot of the people who play with Dan, she has such an interesting, like, rise and fall story. It kind of is like a little bit of a tragic downfall, which again happens to the people who play with Dan. But she started the game like aligning herself, you know, with Libra and April, and they were in the Coven Alliance, right? And so throughout most of the pre-jury section, you know, Keisha was just able to determine how like basically most of the votes went, if not all the votes. They did, her and Libra basically like ran the game, and her aligning herself with those people early on, her aligning herself with April and you know, Libra, they were the movers and the shakers of the game. So with all those connections that she made, she was able to, you know, stay safe for that portion of the game. And I think another thing is that she didn't just align herself with those people. She also had a pretty great social game. She aligned herself with, you know, the rest of the players, with people who like Memphis and Dan and Rennie and Jesse. You know, those are people that were able to really help her after her first alliance basically imploded in the first half of the game.
Yeah. Priya, where did she go from there?
So here's the thing, Taryn. You talked about how Dan is the one we remember. The Renegades is what we remember. Keisha was in a position where she started this alliance, what would we can call the most volatile alliance. The Coven with Libra and with April. This was an alliance that shouldn't have worked, especially given all the interaction we've seen, given all the blowups we've seen throughout. It shouldn't have worked. But they were the story. They were the production for the first half of that season. They had control. They were explosive. There was a lot going on. And Keisha was the one who started it all. That was Keisha's alliance. And because, you know, throughout history, we keep talking about the season and how great it is. We look at it through Dan's eyes because he won. He's the great player we know now. But if we look at it through Keisha's eyes, it is just such an incredible roller coaster that she had to travel and get through to get as far as she did in the game.
Yeah, and really one of the more successful women alliances, like all women alliances, even though it does blow up, like they were dominating, you know, unlike, you know, some others like the Fatal Five, which was never really became a thing, or really like there were a lot of people on this potential cast tried to work with women at various points. Didn't really work out, but the Coven really was a very dominant force in the game for a long time, Phil.
And the thing about that, which I also find interesting about the Coven, is that they still fought like while they were in an alliance, like week two, like April, like Keisha would hear April talking about her and they would just go on a full out just fight in the backyard. And then that night they'd be chilling in the HOH room like nothing happened. It happened a lot. That's what made season 10 so great. And so it's interesting that Keisha is a very dynamic person, that she's able to blow up at people, but she still is able to separate that. And she's still able to maintain a relationship with those people at the same time.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was interesting. The first half of season 10, I feel like it often gets forgotten, that we remember the failed attempt that Brian and Dan made in the very early portion of the season. And then there was like some stuff that happened. Dan was lying low, and then Keisha's birthday. And then from there, it was the Renegades, right? Like something like, I feel like that's what most people talk about when they talk about season 10. But that early portion was very dynamic, Puya.
Very much so. So you mentioned the easy one to remember is the Brian Hart debacle, the failed attempt there, the coup that's where the coven came together was, this is shady. They're being shady. We need to oust them. They get rid of Brian. Then the next week, you know, who could forget? Who could forget the Steven story? The Steven, the much forgotten Steven story. Steven,
we forgot the puppets too, but that's fine.
That's true. We're just glossing
the sock
over
puppets. I mean, look, can we just make this a retelling of season 10? I wouldn't mind that. That should just be a podcast itself, I think.
Yeah, we got time. We got time. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So here we go. Now it's the Steven boot week. And Steven is someone that Keisha is friends with. And they want him out. They want him out bad. Keisha doesn't agree with this, but her alliance doesn't trust him, is not wanting this. Angie, who is also in the house, is also close with Steven, is kind of getting out of this scot-free, and everyone's only looking at Keisha. Keisha doesn't like this. Now Angie's on the radar. So now Angie is who Keisha wants, but people in her alliance don't really want this. Again, the beauty of this that Phil has already illustrated, that you've illustrated, is that this alliance kept going in and out of love with each other. Keisha and Libra are good together. They hate April. But now April and Keisha are good and they hate Libra. And every time one of them had power or control, they were doing something that the other ones might not have really wanted to. Outside of the first week where it seemed like universally they were all down with the cause for getting Brian out, after that, it was very hard to see them on the same page again and again, which wasn't happening. And then the ultimate blowout was during the birthday, of course.
Phil, can you walk us through Keisha's birthday? What happened?
So essentially, with Keisha's birthday, this alliance has been forming for the first, three weeks. And, you know, Keisha went against April and Ollie's intentions to, you know, take out Jerry and Rennie in week three and said targeted Angie, like Puya already described. And so, you know, this was boiling up. And basically, Keisha and Libra started talking about how they didn't like how April seemed like she didn't trust them, right? And so they started talking about that. And of course, Jesse, who was like a target in week four, he overheard that. He was like, that sounds great. And so then he went up and he told April and Ollie basically everything that happened. And you know, the thing about Keisha, the one thing about Keisha's birthday is that she has like complete and total tunnel vision. As soon as she has the thought in her head, she has to say it. And so Keisha was just stewing in the kitchen talking about this whole argument, because eventually her and April got into a fight about it. And then Keisha went into the kitchen and just started talking about April this, April that. And everyone just tried to calm her down, be like, Keisha, it's your birthday, calm down. But she could not do that. When someone tried to calm her down, it made her worse. It made her talk about it more. And then, you know, the whole house exploded basically after that.
I mean, I think that's a good point about Keisha, you know, Keisha as a player, Puya, like, how does she operate? You know, she was playing a dominant game, but she was clearly unafraid to go against the grain, against what her allies wanted. She was getting into fights with other people. She was very, vocal about like how she felt about things, even on her birthday. Is this Keisha the player?
Keisha, the player, is not afraid to make the moves she wants to make personally that benefit her, but she is also unapologetic in that if someone challenges her, she's not going to duck and dive the allegations. She's going to look you in the face and confront you about it right then and there. That is the vibe I get from Keisha. Keisha doesn't stand down. This is former Keisha. It's been a minute. Maybe Keisha now has a leash on just getting angry at people and maybe doesn't want a birthday, the sequel, to happen. But for what we saw in Big Brother 10, Keisha was never afraid to stand her ground, never afraid to let you know how she felt about the moves that she made or the things you are accusing her of.
Yeah, I think her not being able to stand down, I think that actually, in one some way, it kind of helps her. Because again, like I was saying, it gives her this type of tunnel vision. And I think that's the reason, like when Steven went out, she had it in her head that I need to win this HOH so I feel safe with my alliance. And then she won it. I feel like that helps her in competitions for sure.
Yeah. One of the things I'm most excited about, if we, you know, hypothetically see a Keisha return, is that we are definitely getting the clip of Keisha's birthday on the show. Because look, it happened over 10 years ago now. There are so many people that have not been blessed with the vision of Keisha's birthday. I highly recommend that people go and they watch the clip, and don't just watch the show clip either. Go watch the feeds version of it, because it is just it's unbelievably, it's cinematic. Is what it is. It's a well-paced drama. Phil, you're in film school. Could someone have written this out?
No, there's no way. There's no way anyone would write a character like Jerry yelling, "You're going home." You can't write that. But I hope that the premiere basically is just like a really, it's 2 hours, right? I hope it's just going to be like Big Brother the movie, just playing back to all the classics, all the favorites. Because I know most people, I know there's a lot of people who just have not seen a season, like older seasons like Big Brother 10, even though it's like one of the greatest.
Yeah, people are already making like these cool fan edit trailers for the show, like that honestly are way better than anything Big Brother has ever put out. Come on, guys, let's make this happen. Let's not just spend, you know, 15 minutes on the montage.
Yeah, I feel like so this season was 2008. That's 12 years ago. And we know there's probably most likely been a lot of fans that came in around the BB16 era. And there've been newer fans coming in every year, obviously. This is a great time to celebrate your history. And you have a great selection of history in the cast that hypothetically is being put together. So getting a celebration of all that, giving the fans these things, showing them that, hey, we have more gold in the archives. You need to be looking at them. Do that. Also, I would be a bad friend if I didn't personally plug Amon's re-sync, lip sync of this birthday that is available on his Twitter somewhere. Please go look at it. It's a good time.
Oh boy. Okay, so week 4 was a big week in Big Brother 10. April wins the HOH and puts Jesse and Memphis on the block. It's a big turning point. Everything is coming to a head here, and the votes are split, and Dan Giesling finds himself perfectly positioned in the middle. He's been behind the scenes this whole time, developing relationships with both sides, playing them off each other, and now he is in his position where he is the swing vote, and also America's player in this particular week. Luckily, he does not, the wishes of America seem to coincide with his own wishes, but I do think it plays into this situation where it's really going to be played up that which way is Dan going to vote? Nobody knows. Nobody knows, Puya.
He could go anywhere. That's the way Dan is. And that was the start of an arc for Dan. Not that he's coming back this season.
But where is Keisha in all of this?
In all of this, Keisha's the one who, I mean, her birthday was just ruined, right? Her birthday was just ruined by good old Jesse. So Keisha wants this flip. They orchestrate this flip, like, oh, we need to get Dan. And obviously, Dan is voting this way anyway, so it works out. But it feels good to know, hey, Dan is now kind of with us. And I think this helped both of them in a way, because Dan is now coming, rising from his big nap that he had since Brian was out. And Keisha is starting to think, huh, you know what? Maybe I have other avenues I can go to. Maybe it's not just me and the coven all the way to the end. I don't have to deal with this nonsense all the time. I have social play. I can do this. He's good with me. I'm good with him. That's a good connection to have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it really it seems to split the original group into these two different sides, where you have, you know, Jerry and Ollie and Michelle over on one side, and you've got now Dan with Keisha, Rennie, and Libra, and this is and, you know, obviously now pull in Memphis, and you have your sort of end game alliance moving forward, Phil.
Yeah, and it was great that. I think, you know, Keisha was able to kind of set those, she set up those allies earlier on in the game while she was still in this majority Coven alliance. You know, her and Dan had a good connection. Her and Memphis had a good connection. So, you know, after that, in week five, when the targets became, you know, Keisha and Libra, Libra was the one who went home. Libra mm-hmm. was the one in the forefront. And, you know, Keisha still had her side alliance ready to go for the second half of the game. It worked out beautifully for her.
Yes. And then this group is basically going to run the table a bit here. Obviously, they lose the immediately following HOH. As you said, Michelle is going to be able to take Libra out. But then Rennie, Dan, and Keisha are going to go back to back to back with a little bit of tomfoolery in the middle with Dan's win. But Keisha, what is Keisha up to here, Phil? While this is happening.
Well, so I think the thing about the second half of the game, of course, the edit is mostly becomes like, look at how Dan is playing the game. Mm-hmm. But I think we mostly see Dan's really begins to set his hooks into the rest of his alliance. And so this is the part of the game where Keisha is, of course, still a great player in the game, but she's a little bit more complacent. You know, she's a little bit more. She feels very safe and secure in the fact that, you know, Rennie and Dan and then her are going to win the back-to-back HOHs. And she's not worrying about that. She's not worrying about the fact that the Renegades have already been formed. She's not worrying about the fact that, you know, those are going to be the final two. And, you know, her relationship with Rennie, of course, while it was a good one, was not going to be able to carry her to the end of the game.
Yeah, I think Keisha sees this group as like a great spot for her, because she was with these other two very, you know, outspoken women who had their own opinions and their own feelings about like where they wanted to go. And none of them were afraid of like expressing their opinion and fighting for their thing. She comes into this alliance and it seems like everybody's just like willing to do what she wants. And she's the person who's closest to all of them. She was closest to Rennie. She's the one that had the relationship with Memphis. She's the one that pulled Dan in to save Memphis. So she should be the central point of it all, unaware of the fact that Dan and Memphis have, you know, created their own thing and are doing their own thing within that group. And so I do agree. I think that she and of course, Dan and Memphis are going to work very hard to like, you know, lull her to sleep, essentially, by being like, yes, Keisha, you're our girl, man. Like, we're into it. Let's go. Let's do this, Puya.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, it's interesting because we think of an explosive first half. Talk about a very quiet second half. It's like maybe once you find your Shangri-La and you're like, you know what? This is what I've been needing. I need this alliance that I know is going to work for me. It's good. She took her foot off the gas a little bit. And what happens when then you have someone like Dan who's playing from way behind, coming in as the underdog and clawing his way back up, doing the most, trying to do as much as he can to gain pace, takes over big time. It's unfortunate for Keisha, but I do think that it's a very valuable lesson to have in your first and only season that you've played, to have had to deal with a very, very explosive alliance and then to have had to be the more complacent, quiet member of a successful alliance as well. Both successful alliances just wired differently, and you are part of both of them in different roles in both of them. You're learning different things there. But I do think that obviously the big catalyst is took your foot off the gas a little too much, but everything looked like it should have worked. So I don't blame her exactly, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So Jerry's going to win the week 8 HOH and try to get rid of Dan, but it's not going to work out for him. And this is, I think, when Keisha starts to realize that something is afoot. Why is Memphis saving Dan here and not me? Okay, Rennie's being sent home. Wait a minute, what's happening? Hold on. I don't like this, Phil. I think something has gone amiss.
See, this is the point. where the game is already lost for her. And she, again, she has a sense of it, but she's not terrified yet. She's worried about it, but she's not, you know, freaking out yet. And so when the week after, you know, when Memphis is the one to send her home and she's, you know, shocked, at that point, she didn't realize the table was already set. You know, the cards have already been dealt to her in the week before. And yeah, it obviously, this is a great lesson for her to learn, you know what I mean, for next season.
Let me make a comparison here. In season 12, we saw Brittany Haynes get brigaded. In the final four, yes. They sat her down and they said, sorry, you're done. And people saw Brittany as a great character, bad player, that she had no potential, that this was no good. She was so snowed by these guys. There was no chance. She came back as a coach in season 14 with Dan, Janelle, and Mike Boogie. And people were like, what is Brittany doing here? How does she fit into this? Brittany comes back into season 14, probably plays the next best game behind Dan Gieseling in that season. I think she learns a lot from playing with the brigade and getting blindsided in that way. Keisha was really the Brittany before Brittany, in a lot of ways at the final four. At the final four, she had a similar position. It wasn't all three of them, but it was essentially Dan and Memphis being like, sorry, you thought it was one thing, but it wasn't that thing. It was another one. It was another thing, Puya.
Yeah, I mean, and I would be bold enough to say, should I be bold enough? I would say that, you know, you mentioned she was kind of starting to realize things have gone awry, maybe earlier than a Brittany had, right, in 12. So, again, I do think that having experienced something like this is just more lessons for your next time, especially if you've had a long gap. Because, I mean, Brittany went from 12 to 14. That's a one full year in between of sitting back and marinating on your thoughts. This is a full 12 years. I got to imagine 12 years and you're watching the show and you're thinking about your experiences and you played with one of the greatest of all time, the greatest of all time, depending on which robot you ask. And boom, you have lessons there too. There's so much potential here for a Keisha return, should she return.
The thing about like the Brittany game though, is that she came back and she said, you know, I'm not going to let that happen to me. I'm, you know, going to be the head of the alliance. She basically, I think she was the one really making a lot of the decisions for like the Quack Pack. So if Keisha comes back, is she going to be thinking the same thing? Is she going to be thinking, you know, I need to be making the decisions for this alliance. I don't want this to happen last time. And is she going to overcorrect, you know, where she becomes like the big player in the first half? And, you know, I think another thing is that Big Brother 10, you know, it had 13 players in it. You know what I mean? It was a much faster game. This season, you know, we're going to have, 16, probably 16 players, you know.
At least, probably, yeah.
Yeah, at least, exactly. And, you know, the game's going to be, you know, maybe like 100 days, you know, maybe less, who knows. But, you know, the game is a lot slower paced. And so I hope Keisha doesn't overplay in the beginning to get herself out early.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Keisha was also a more aggressive player than Brittany at the start of her season. She was the one calling the shots. And as we talked about, it was Keisha's story was really the one of letting her foot off the gas a little bit. So it would not surprise me at all if we see Keisha coming in instead of being mellowed by age, that she comes in full force. Like, let's go. Like, she's full Janelle season 7. And we have a Janelle here too, so you know, what do you think, Priya? Are we gonna see Keisha with the pedal to the floor here?
I feel like I'm of two minds, right? I'm as someone who's gonna be rooting for Keisha, I hope not. I think if she comes in quiet, if she comes in like not really doing anything and kind of no foot on the gas, she's gonna be in a good spot, because as an older player, they're not gonna come after her. Who's her connection? Right. You might be looking at, there's one other hypothetical person in the mix here that she might be connected to. Outside of that, she should be okay. But also, wouldn't I love to see Keisha comes in and goes, Coven 2.0, Danny Donato, Janelle, Davon, let's do this. Lock the four. Let's go. Wouldn't I love to see that? Of course, I would love to see that. But I'm nervous about the success rate of coming into an all-star season and going full foot on the gas. I don't think every player is capable of having a success rate with that. And I can't tell right now if Keisha would be someone who would be on the good side of that ratio.
The thing is, I think Keisha's hungry for it. You know what I mean? I think, like, we don't see Keisha that much on social media or anything. I don't think she has anything to plug. I don't think she has herself to promote. I think she's there to win the money. And she's going to, again, she has that tunnel vision. She's going to be driven, which might be able to help her. Again, I think if she's driven enough to win the first HOH, set herself up in a good alliance, and hopefully lay low, you know, she'd be able to do well. But if she is also hungry for it and just plays really hard like Shannon Elizabeth, and, you know, then her game's done. So I don't know. We'll see.
Keisha Elizabeth coming into the game. All right. So let's look at some of the people that she's playing with here. Because we talked about Janelle. Do we see her working with Janelle? Because I think that, you know, before we made Brittany comparisons, I think that there were also a lot of Janelle comparisons to Keisha back in the day. She, you know, they're both these blondes, and they were both like probably a lot more like intelligent than people were willing to give them credit for initially. And they were both like these big personalities and aggressive players. We're going to see them both in this season. Do you think they could work together, Phil?
I definitely think so. I just think they're the same type of person. I definitely think that, you know, this cast is skewing, you know, a lot older than usual. You know, I don't know the average, but it's definitely, I think the youngest person list that's rumored is like 25 years old. You know what I mean? So I definitely think there could be like kind of like an older player alliance, you know, with Janelle, maybe Kacer, maybe Kevin. You know, I could definitely see it. They're all above 40. You know, Keisha's 40th birthday is actually, or 41st birthday is actually tomorrow. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I agree. I think that, Keisha, Janelle, Kacer, and Puya, what you talked about, like a new coven, you know, bring in somebody like Danny, Donato, Devon. It wouldn't surprise me if Keisha had a relationship with Kevin Campbell. They were on adjacent seasons. Rob talks about this all the time on Survivor, where like people from seasons that took place like near each other often have some kind of relationship because you're still in the community at that point. So it wouldn't surprise me if she knew him to some degree. At least how do you feel about that, Puya?
I feel very comfortable with that, because, you know, it's like it's the whole like number neighbors thing that happened last year, where people were texting their number neighbor. This is your season neighbor. This is the one you've most likely have talked to, interacted with, because they were right after your season. You're watching the show if you weren't before, or like the right before your season, and you would have studied them up before you went in. So I feel very comfortable with what you're saying. And for me, the other one is the big one from the recent seasons is Devon. I mean, if you Google Keisha Smith birthday, it's her birth date, and then it's a picture of her and Devon as the picture. So take that what you will. They've met at the very least. They're fans of each other. That's good.
Do we have any additional info on that? Because we talked about this with Devon, that there's a photo of them together. But are they friends? Was this just a photo that was taken?
So I'm pretty sure, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the photo was taken at the Big Brother 20 premiere, I'm pretty sure.
That's what I was told, yeah.
And so also the other people that who were sense. There were Kacer and Enzo. They were also at the Big Brother 20 premiere. I don't know. I don't think anyone was like texting, like pre-gaming like 2 years in advance. But, you know, they met. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure they talked a little bit. So, you know, just to say what could happen.
You're rekindling my memory on this one. Wasn't the Big Brother 20 premiere the like they invited a bunch of
they were
former
in the audience.
Alumni? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I remember at the time there was some buzz amongst the alumni that this meant something, that they were talking about like, ooh, could All-Stars be in the works soon? I would be very surprised if there wasn't potential All-Star talk at this event.
Do I think that they exchanged numbers? Definitely. Definitely. And maybe it was just like a fun, like over drinks, like, haha, how fun would it be if we played together that night? And then they all went to their lives. But you don't lose. You don't forget those interactions. You don't, especially when you get called in. Right. So I feel like Keisha's going to be a familiar face for the old schoolers. She's going to have so one or two connections on this side with the new schoolers. And ultimately, I think given what we've gotten from her, how bubbly she is, how social she is, I think she's going to be situated very well, very comfortably in the midst of all this. Because, you know, let's if we look at that coven conversation, I don't think Keisha's going to be the one targeted first in that situation. If she's in this buxom blondes alliance with Janelle, I think Janelle's still going to be looked at first. If she's in a situation with Davon, I think Davon's going to be looked at first. So ultimately, guys, what I'm thinking is, Keisha, please, please don't put your foot on the gas right away because it looks like you are well positioned from my view. If you just don't do too much, I think she's in an amazing spot. And especially if we go off what the timeline has been with this hypothetical, with the rumor mill, she's what, arguably the last person to have been added or second last person to have been added. So that is enough time that I don't know. I'm losing my track of thought. I'm just worried now. I'm worried because I don't want her to put her foot on the gas.
I think you have a point that she was a last minute addition to the rumor mill. I don't know if what that means in terms of when she was added to the mix, how much she's been able to pregame, how many other people she's been able to talk to. She may come in a little bit less prepared than a lot of the other people. And I'm not sure how that impacts her game, Phil.
Yeah, the thing is, like, again, we talked about it before, but Big Brother 10 is mostly viewed as just Dan played the best game ever. That's what we think of it as. And of course, Keisha was America's favorite player. But mm-hmm. when Keisha goes into the house, I think it's going to be mostly, she's going to be like an unknown entity. You know, no one's going to really know what to expect from her after 12 years. And so I think that might be a little bit frightening for some people. Maybe she won't be the first like person to take out because who cares? But I also think that, you know, people don't really know that much about her game. You know, I think I might compare it to the winner of Survivor Guatemala when Dani Boatwright, when she went on Survivor Winners at War. You know, she hasn't played in so long and no one really knew that much about her game. And then, you know, she wasn't able to do that well because she hasn't played in so long and the game is much different now.
Yeah. Okay. We need to talk about the Memphis of it all here. Memphis, who she played in season 10 with very closely. She was burned by him. He is the only other person from her original cast that she's actually played with that hypothetically could be on the season. So where does this go? What do we know what her current status is in terms of her relationship with Memphis? It's been a long time, so I could see that, you know, despite what happened in the game, they could be fine. I mean, they certainly worked pretty well together up until a point. There's no Dan here to get in the way this time, so you could easily see like a Memphis Keisha actually being loyal to each other this time, or you could see some tension there.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think for her especially, any familiar face is going to be a friendly face. You know, I think especially on Memphis's end, I'm sure he does not have any bad blood towards Keisha. I don't know their history outside of the house, but, you know, I don't see him holding any type of grudges. And I don't think I see her holding any type of grudges. You know, that was 12 years ago. And of course, she blamed Memphis when she left that Big Brother 10 house, but she went home. She watched the season. She watched what happened. It was both of them. It was Dan and Memphis. So, you know, I don't think she's holding a particular grudge stress towards Memphis.
What do you think, Priya?
Yeah, I would also feel similarly. I feel like you come into this All-Star season 12 years removed from your original and you see one person from your season. Automatically, I feel like that's someone you should be like, you know, no matter what, I feel like we should be working together. We should be good. We don't even need to talk, really. That's what I think. Now, obviously, there could be a situation where one of them has to go because they have to split a pair up because that's the worry. Then I could see her trying to feed them to the wolves. But, and like use the excuse of like, he betrayed me all those years ago. Or Memphis uses the whole like, she didn't vote for me. Whatever the storyline needs to be. I don't think going into this season that it's going to be a season of, hey, we need to split all the pairs up. I would imagine it's going to be more of a fluid situation. And if it is more fluid, I think they would work together. I think they'd be fine. And I think that they wouldn't need to upset the apple cart by targeting each other.
Well, how do we think Dan is involved here, right? Because I have to imagine that Dan, if he knows that Memphis and Keisha are potentially on the season, especially Memphis, that I could easily see him getting himself a little bit involved in some of the pre-gaming, making some connections, some introductions at the very least. And if that's the case, you know, is he working for both of them? Is he working for one of them to the detriment of another one? How does Dan factor into all of this, Phil?
I'm just laughing, thinking of him like setting up a group chat with Keisha and Memphis and not saying anything, just setting it up. You know, I think that it's a funny thought. Do you think Dan is like setting people up? You know, you think he's getting Ian in there too? I don't know.
I mean, it depends on like what Dan's connections are. Honestly, I think if Dan does have a connection, it's probably one of the better ones is probably with Janelle. They have a pretty good relationship, and I could easily see Janelle reaching out to Dan and Dan being like, I mean, I got this guy that might that could work with you. I think again, at the very least, I think that. You know, he probably has some involvement. He certainly seems to be aware that he has friends that are playing on the season, or so he says on his Twitch stream. So if he's aware that he has friends that are playing on the season, then they've talked to him about playing on the season. And if they've talked to him about playing on the season, then they probably asked him about some things, and he's probably talked to some other people as well. And I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like Dan. So about, was it 2 years ago, two summers ago, he did like a reunion style YouTube video where he called some players that he's played with individually and talked to them for a chunk. He talked to Ian in that video. He talked to Janelle. He talked to Memphis. Keisha was not in that. Mm-hmm. However, Dan has been part of the rumor mill probably longer than anybody, and he wasn't playing at all. So you see the speculation on any forum, any like Twitter, any social media. I imagine if any of these people were contacted during that time, they would have talked to him. And they would have tried to at least get some guidance or work with him or whatever. I see Dan as someone who's going to spread the love, especially when he has no stake in here, right? He wants his friends to do well. His reputation is not going to be tarnished by any means. No one's going to get a second win in here that he should worry about from his friends. I think he's helping them all out. I think he's I forgot about Ian winning for a second. What I'm trying to say with all the word vomit I'm clearly putting out there is that I think he's going to spread the love. I think he's like, Ian, talk to Keisha. Keisha, talk to Memphis. You guys are good. Everyone, like, get to know each other. I don't see him playing favorites.
But the thing is, I think when you're in the house and Keisha sees Ian, is Keisha, you think this is going to go through Keisha's head where she sees him and she's like, you know, he knows Dan, so we're good. I don't know if it's that easy. You know what I mean? But... you know, I think any type of pregame alliance might be a good alliance just to have it. You know what I mean? Especially since she came into the game so late, she didn't have that much time to pregame. So maybe that will be enough for her. But I don't know if that will really make or break her game.
Right. I feel like, so obviously the first thing is what personal relationships you have. Those are the ones that take priority. Then it's the who do I have that's a friend of a friend? Who's my mutuals here? Then that would be the next one she looks at. But I do think, Phil, I think we've talked about it. So her coming in later, or her being contacted later, might even feed into what we want, which is maybe she comes in a little bit scared than she would have if she had all that time to prepare. Maybe she comes in a little bit more like, I'm going to play it safe. I know you. I've talked to you. I'm going to see what you got going on, and I'm going to try and get in position over there. Maybe.
You know, I also think that might end up being a good thing where there's a player who knows, you know, Keisha came in late. Let me take you under my wing. I'll help you. I'll bring you into my alliance. You're good with me. You know what I mean? And maybe if multiple players are thinking that way, she might be good. I don't know. Maybe.
How do we feel about Nicole Franzel with Keisha? Obviously, Keisha did something right for Nicole to orchestrate that Keisha's on the season and not anybody else. But what do we think? What do we think? What do we think about a potential Keisha-Nicole relationship?
I think if this is an alliance, listening to them on the live feeds talk to each other is going to be very interesting because they've got very distinct voices, very loud voices. Or if they argue, same thing. But on a reel, I do see them being people that could work together. Obviously, Nicole Franzel is a big, big fan of the franchise, is someone who avidly watches these shows, who I think could see a Keisha and be like, you know what? I didn't expect to see Keisha here. I love Keisha. I love the birthday. Let's work together. Come here. Let's work together. I'm down. Keisha, on the other hand, again, social, Taryn. I think the word social, I feel very strongly giving that like to Keisha. We were going to give superlatives out today. I think she's someone who can get along with almost anybody. And I feel confident that she can work it out with Nicole. And if you're trying to figure out the degrees of separation, Ian, Nicole, Ian, Dan, Keisha. That's a good enough line to go through. Or Davon, Nicole, Davon, Keisha. So,
you know, I don't know if I see it that way. Because for me, I think that Nicole is a very, you know, timid person who's very anti-confrontational. And I think that's essentially the opposite of what Keisha is. Do you know what I mean? So I could also see Nicole being kind of afraid to, you know, really piss Keisha off. And I don't know if that's a match made in heaven, but who's to say?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Nicole works with Polly, who's very confrontational. I think she likes to be able to hide behind a confrontational player, but I'm not sure that Keisha is the kind of player that allows somebody to hide behind her. She's not really, you know what I mean? She's not really like the Polly confrontational. She's a lot more like, no. Get out from behind me. You stand over here. What are you doing? We talked about this with Janelle, that Janelle has played with both Dr. Will and Dan. Keisha only has played with Dan, but we talked about this. She was fooled by Dan, essentially, got screwed by Dan. Does she come into the game worried about that? Does she look at the Tylers and the Codys and even potentially the Memphises and think, I'm not going to let it happen to me again. I'm not going to work with these kinds of people because I don't want to get screwed.
I feel like once you get misted, the paranoia will heighten. I do think that she's going to play very, very much paranoid dealing with specific people that have proven to be in the conversation to have their own line of mist, like a Tyler. I do see her being skeptical of someone like a Tyler. But then at the same time, I could also see her, after a couple of weeks, putting that guard down. Once she feels secure, maybe like being like, okay. Because we've seen her take her foot off the gas. I could very much see her finding herself a secure position with some of these players that she might be worried about, and then gaining that trust and going with that trust.
You guys have both just gotten me so hyped for like an ultra paranoid Keisha, where she's just anytime anyone does anything, she's going to just freak out. It's going to be amazing. I hope we have a Keisha's birthday every single week.
Yeah. It's such a shame that Keisha's birthday is going to happen right before the premiere.
Right.
It's just, hopefully they celebrate a belated birthday. Hopefully she's like, it was my birthday just a few days ago, guys. Can we maybe get some cake? if the premiere is not them moving in and there's already a birthday cake on the table, that says happy birthday, Keisha. And, it's not a celebration of Keisha's belated birthday, then they have done something wrong, in my opinion.
They're not putting respect on the history. I agree with you. I mean, again, you're being sequestered during your birthday 4 days prior. Like, that counts. It's the birthday week, technically. Get her a cake. Let them all enjoy cake. Why not? If anything, that they might attribute that to, look at Keisha having a birthday so we can have cake. Let's keep Keisha. And I'm okay with this arrangement. So
I hope they have cake instead of like having wine or champagne in the beginning. You know what I mean? They all just sit around the table and celebrate Keisha's birthday any strategy starts. Cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alternatively, are we missing some drama? It's, you know, I'm not exactly sure when this podcast will air, but on the day of Keisha's birthday in sequester, are they going to, in isolation, just start to feel angsty? Wait a minute. I feel like people are talking about me and I'm not sure why, but I'm feeling it. And then they just start yelling at each other, you know, telepathically or something along those lines. Is there going to be some kind of drama that we're missing out on because there's no cameras there, Puya?
I don't want that. I don't want to miss any of the drama, to be honest with you. I'm trying to get all the action. Are you telling me that when August 1st happens, they're going to wake up and something's in the air and that kind of carries over? I wouldn't be shocked because it is a powerful moment. It is a powerful day.
The ghost of Keisha's birthday haunts the Big Brother contestants. I think there's always going to be drama around Keisha on her birthday. That's just a law of nature at this point.
If only production cared about the fans. If only.
Yeah. They should just give Keisha her phone for just that day so that she can just be live the whole day and talk about how she feels. All right. Anybody else from this cast that we feel like, because I do agree. I think she might want to target Tyler. I just feel it. I just feel like she's going to look at Tyler and she's going to be like, nah.
Nope. Mm-mm. Been not through
gonna,
this before.
Not going to let those baby blues get to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, yeah. Tyler's one that I think will be on her radar for sure. And then I can't think of another one off the top of my head. What about you, Phil?
On her radar? Yeah, I definitely think it would be just like the Tylers of the world. Maybe Memphis later on. But I don't see anyone that hopefully she goes into the house and kind of just lets the game pass her by or just a little bit. You know what I mean? But because I also don't see anyone like wanting to target her. Do we think anyone is targeting her or what? Because if someone wants to target her, she'll target them back for sure. That's just who Keisha is. Yeah. But I don't know if anyone is.
Well, here's the thing. I think coming in as a late replacement, if that's true, it makes her an easy pawn. It makes her an easy just kind of like nobody will be pissed off if I put Keisha on the block or even target Keisha because she didn't have a chance to pregame. She doesn't have any set people already, and she's not going to attain any set people if she's already on the block and nobody wants to touch her. So it makes it a very easy kind of like, I don't want to make any waves. Let's put up some of the people that aren't connected. And that could be dangerous for her.
Yeah, we talked about this with Kaser and how like he likes to shoot in the middle. If someone doesn't want to make any waves or cause any drama right off the gate or cause any conflict, getting rid of Akeisha could be the choice. The beauty of it is, if it's someone who knows their history, they know Keisha's not going to take it quietly. So this is a mistake on your part if you're trying to take out a loud middle. Go for someone who's a more quiet middle. Keisha's not that one. I tell you that.
Well, is that a bad thing, though? If somebody decides to use Keisha as an easy pawn, thinking, let me put up Nicole as the target because she's made a fool of herself in the pregame. And then we'll put up Keisha as a nice, easy pawn. Nobody will be pissed off. Does Keisha then explode and get that tunnel vision and plant the target on herself?
So my worry initially was to say yes, but I mean, Keisha had been on the block couple of times in her time in BB10 and only received one vote at the final four, which was one vote to evict. So I think when she's on the block, she can be calm and collected. She can let the other person dig themselves a grave if need be. Obviously, it also depends on how much mist is in the air. If someone like a Tyler's there and is trying to like fool her into thinking she's the target and winds her up, maybe that changes. But I think for the most part, she's able to handle her composure on the block, hopefully.
I think, you know, these players, they're all stars or supposedly all stars. So, you know, they're going to play it smarter. I think if Keisha explodes, I don't think that's going to make her a target. I think that might make, you know, them want to keep her as opposed to someone who's kind of laying low and playing it cool. They'd want to get those people out before because those are going to be dangerous threats as the game goes on. Hopefully Keisha doesn't become like a goat or anything like that. But, you know, I don't know.
Good point. Okay, what Keisha comes into this season, what is her story? What does she have something to prove? Like where is she at here emotionally? What is her goal? How does Keisha feel like she's succeeded when she plays Big Brother All-Stars?
I think Keisha's coming in quite well known as one of the forgotten people from her season. It became the Dan season, the first time someone unanimously won season, the season a duo called the Renegades ran table on, whereas it's forgotten that she created the Coven. It's forgotten that that alliance, for as explosive as it was, controlled the first half. I think Keisha is coming in to prove I still got it, to prove, hey, you might not remember me, but after this, you're going to want to go back and watch my season. She's going to have new fans. I think this is just a reminder to herself and to the audience that, hey, I've got what it takes to play, and I've got what it takes to go against the best of them, because I did go against the best of them once and only came up this short. So I think that's the story for Keisha, is a I still got it narrative.
Yeah, I think she's going on to really just prove it to herself. You know, I think she did she won HOHs, you know. She ran the house. She did all that. But the one thing she did not do is win. And I think that's all she really wants to do. I think she wants to prove it to herself, like Puya said.
All right. What are our predictions for Keisha? How do we think she fares? Where does she land here on Big Brother 22? Phil, what do you think?
You know, this makes me sad, but I see Keisha going out pre-merge. Pre-jury. Just because, like we were saying, I don't know how well connected she is in the Big Brother community. And, you know, I just see her, the game again is a lot slower. It's not as fast. I can see her really imploding in the beginning of the game, and that would be it, especially since she hasn't played in 12 years.
I think she's in the bubble. I think she could very well be last pre-juror or first juror, jury foreman. But I'm not going to say that. I'm going to go bolder. I'm going to say, give me top eight finish, jury, but not too much far in.
Yeah, I think I'm with Phil here. I think she's an easy target early on. I think that's a really dangerous spot for her. And even if she survives the early target, I think that it might be hard to build back up from that position. And so even if she then does make a late run, she might be surrounded with people who have a better shot of winning a jury vote or something along those lines. It's a fairly stacked cast, despite some, you know, missing elements. And it's going to be hard to really make your case, especially if you don't come in very well connected to have those already on the jury votes, for you, to built in essentially. So I think she's going to have a tough time winning the game. I think she could be an early target. And even if she makes it further, I'm not sure it's super in contention to win further.
Yeah, I think that like it is about perception is everything. Mm-hmm. And so she's not coming in as, you know, like a lion, as like, a top tier player. So if she makes it to the end, you know, she needs to be up against someone who, you know, maybe was even less so of a threat than she was in order for her to win the game. Just because if she goes up to the end, you know, with a Tyler or something like that, I mean, who knows how the game's going to go, but I just think perception, Tyler would have had a harder time to make it to the end because of his bigger threat.
Yep. And again, especially if she starts from a bottom position, I think it's hard to make the case that she played a dominant game and deserves the win that way. She doesn't have the reputation as so much, and she wouldn't be able to have played that kind of game. She would have had to play the underdog game, which can be respected depending on how it plays out. And I think that she is the kind of person that could play a very entertaining and dynamic underdog game. But again, there's a lot of those kinds of players on this cast. So I think she has a tricky road ahead of her, but I'm definitely rooting for her.
Same. I have one question for both of you.
Yes.
So you've mentioned where your prediction is on where she may lie. I want to know, above or behind, is she going to do better than Memphis or not in this season? That's my question.
I see her doing better. I don't have that many high hopes for Memphis. I think his game, people like to now say Memphis was a great player. I don't mean to get into the Memphis podcast whenever you guys do it, but people say that Memphis played, you know, a great game, but I definitely think Dan was, like, if you look back, Dan was making most of the decisions there. And so I don't think Memphis is going to have a good time, because he's also a late comer into this. You know, he just came, his name was just mentioned. So I could see him going out like extremely early. So I see Keisha doing better.
I think it's an interesting question because I do think that they are in somewhat similar spots, and it could be interesting to see which one finds more success. Again, it also could depend on if Dan was in the mix doing some work for Memphis, that could be the difference. So we'll probably find out, Puya. But this was a lot of fun. Thank you guys so much for joining me here to talk about Keisha. Phil, where can people find you?
So I'm going to start using social media a lot again. I don't really use it that much. But you can follow me on Twitter at PNTJRX for now. At least that's what it is. PNTJRX.
There you go. So great having you, Phil. I feel like you've got some great takes. I love your mind for the game. So I'm very excited to be chatting with you this season.
Awesome. I'm really excited. I've said that a million times, I know, but this is just really great.
All right. And Puya, where can people find you?
People can find me on all major social media platforms, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, all at Puyaism. I'm stoked for this season, Taryn. It's going to be a good one. Phil, this is the second time I've interacted with you, and I'm keen to see you more around here, man. Looking forward to it.
All right. And you can, of course, find me on Twitter at ArmstrongTaryn or on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn. Armstrong, thank you for joining us on this hypothetical journey. We'll see you next time.
All right. Great job from Taryn, Puya, and Phil T on the Keisha preview. I think it's going to be interesting to see which Keisha does show up. If it is going to be that ultra paranoid version of Keisha, either way, I think that Puya is right. Birthday week counts. Get a cake in there for that woman. We'll see what they do with Keisha in Big Brother All-Stars, hypothetically speaking, of course. And great to have Phil on the previews. Phil, in his audition, talked about how Josh Martinez was about to be the first two-time winner. He was about to be the king of Survivor, basically the Sandra Diaz Twine of Big Brother. And he was about to do it. He had a great thesis. I don't know if it was going to be true or not, but I was like, maybe Josh could do it. But that was hypothetically speaking if Josh was going to be on the season. But very excited to podcast more with Phil coming up here in this season. All right, that's going to do it for us here today. Thanks again for Taryn filling in for me on this Keisha preview. We are going to be back tomorrow with talking about Nicole Anthony and more Big Brother 10 talk for you. Memphis talk coming up as well in our next episode of the Hypothetically Speaking podcast series. Of course, on Friday, I was busy recording our 6+ hour patron cast marathon. Of course, that's available for you on our YouTube channel if you want to check it out, even if you're not a patron. We also reactivated our patron Discord account. It's a great time here at the start of the month to get on board with everything we're doing on Patreon. Come be a part of everything we have going on in our Rob Has a Podcast patron community. Get access to all of our patron podcast feeds and more. That's at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you again so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.